6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. Islamic State has claimed responsibility for Thursday's coordinated bomb and gun attack in the Indonesian capital Jakarta that left 7 people dead, including the attackers. Violence began with a series of explosions mid-morning in an area near a shopping center, luxury hotels, and embassies. An attack by IS had been expected in December, but Thursday's assault was still a surprise. VOA's Steve Herman in Jakarta tells us there were other surprises.
There are hundreds of Indonesians who have apparently gone to the Middle East and been involved to some degree with this organization, and that there are hundreds, if not thousands of more, who are perhaps sympathetic. And that is a real shock to most people here, because this has been considered for centuries an extremely tolerant society, the vast majority of the people practicing a moderate form of Islam. And as they would tell you, that this sort of thing has nothing to do with the Islam that they believe in.
VOA's Steve Herman in Jakarta. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has called for an end to the sieges on Syrian towns, warning all parties to the conflict that using starvation as a weapon is a war crime. Aid agencies this week reached 3 besieged towns for the first time since October. They found starving people. UN mission in Liberia said everything is set to hand over security matters to the Liberian government. Government will assume full responsibility for security by June 30th, the deadline for the pullout of UN peacekeepers. This is VOA News. World Health Organization says the most recent outbreak of Ebola in Liberia is over, bringing the number of cases in West Africa down to 0 for the first time since the regional epidemic began in early 2014. Lisa Schlein has more from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
WHO Director of Emergency Risk Management and Humanitarian Response, Rick Brennan, says it has taken an enormous collective effort by the affected countries and international community to free West Africa of this disease.
While this is an important milestone and a very important step forward, we have to say that the job is still not done. That's because there is still ongoing risk of re-emergence of the disease because of persistence of the virus in a proportion of survivors.
Dr. Brennan warns the WHO anticipates more flare-ups, but says there is little danger of these turning into a full-blown epidemic. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And just under 3 weeks left until the start of the U.S. presidential primary nominating process, the top Republican presidential contenders faced off late Thursday in a debate in the primary state of South Carolina. Candidates began by taking aim at the main man they hoped to replace, President Obama. Another prominent focus was Democratic presidential frontrunner Hillary Clinton. Taking center stage at the nationally televised debate late Thursday was billionaire real estate mogul Donald Trump. Trump, that is, who continues to lead in almost all national polls. Other participants were Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio, Governor Chris Christie, Governor John Kasich, former Governor Jeb Bush, and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson. According to a report by the World Anti-Doping Agency, senior figures at the International Association of Athletics Conference Federations must have been aware of the full extent of doping in track and field and were themselves steeped in corruption. 89-page report details embedded corruption with the IAAF. It accused top officials running the sport of track and field of blackmailing athletes who doped and failing to discipline them in a timely manner. Newly discovered supernova is out there, and astronomers are excited about it, calling it the brightest exploding star ever seen. It is about 3.8 billion light years from Earth. Scientists say at its peak, it is 20 times brighter than all the stars in the entire galaxy, the Milky Way combined. They also say it has an astounding 570 billion times brighter than the sun. Puzzling to astronomers is how in the world it gains its super intensity.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Barton in Washington. Today is Friday, January 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The East Africa Legislative Assembly calls a hearing today on the crisis in Burundi.
In this very meeting, we've also taken the liberty of inviting the government of Burundi, as well as political parties in Burundi, civil society organizations, for them to come and put their position before a public hearing.
Abdallah Mwiyi is the chairman of the Conflict Resolution Committee of the East Africa Legislative Assembly. Zimbabwe's government denies President Mugabe is in ill health. We'll examine the lessons learned in the West Africa Ebola epidemic. And parents of Nigeria's abducted Chibok girls are not happy after a meeting with President Buhari.
That was an opportunity for us as a nation to connect with the parents and actually apologize to them for what has happened and make them feel that they are not alone in this whole tragedy. But unfortunately, we came out of this meeting not feeling a sense of connection.
Aisha Yusufu is the spokeswoman for the Bring Back Our Girls movement of Nigeria. Liberian police say they are ready to take over security responsibilities as UN peacekeepers prepare to leave the country. And South Sudan women demand the speakership of the transitional government. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Worries about the deteriorating security and humanitarian situation in Burundi have prompted a public hearing about the crisis by the Conflict Resolution Committee of the East Africa Legislative Assembly. The hearing will be held in the Tanzanian city of Arusha today, Friday. Abdallah Mwiyi, chairman of the Conflict Resolution Committee, says his group expects to hear from the petitioners, including civil society and opposition groups, as well as the government of Burundi. He tells reporter Peter Clotty, the committee will then present its report to the entire assembly for deliberation and recommendations on how best to help resolve the Burundian crisis.
We've come into Arusha and invited the petitioners to appear before the committee and to put forth their case in relation to this petition. In this very meeting, we've also taken the liberty of inviting the government of Burundi, as well as political parties, the ruling party in Burundi and the opposition political parties, civil society organizations, for them to come and put their position before a public hearing and for us to compile, to formulate a report and submit before the House for debate and resolutions thereon.
So far that you've begun the process, how has the process been? How has been the contribution of those invited to present their case?
We've started today, and it was an internal process today. We, as a committee, sat to decide on how best to approach this procedure. We will interact, we'll interrogate the petitioners on Friday. A public hearing will commence, whereby all the stakeholders from a cross-section of Burundi society will come and give us their position and their positions as far as what they see is unfolding in Burundi.
How long will the compilation of the report last before it's tabled before the entire House of the East Africa Legislative Assembly for consideration, deliberation, and recommendation to be adopted to help the situation in Burundi?
Our initial plan was to have this report submitted in the upcoming plenary, which will start on the 24th of January. But because we have received a request from the Burundi government that they would wish to put their presentation at a later date, we will await and give every opportunity available to the government of Burundi for them to come and appear before our committee.
What do you think are the prospects of this process? Because the Burundian government was slightly not welcoming to a proposal by the African Peace and Security Council to send some peacekeepers to help stabilize and protect, you know, refugees from the ongoing conflict. So what do you think are the prospects of this process from IALA?
I am optimistic. I believe that the approach should always be an inclusive approach. An approach, you know, we have to be very careful not to alienate any party. The situation is difficult, but we must take into account that the government of the day is the government of the day and is a key stakeholder.
Abdallah Mwiyi is the chairman of the Conflict Resolution Committee of the East Africa Legislative Assembly. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Arusha, Tanzania. A spokeswoman for the Bring Back Our Girls movement of Nigeria has again said it is the duty of the Nigerian government to rescue the Chibok girls from Boko Haram captivity, irrespective of which political party is in power. Aisha Yesufu says liberating the girls is not a privilege, but a constitutional right that the Nigerian government must fulfill. The Islamist extremist group kidnapped more than 270 girls from a Chibok boarding school in northern Nigeria in April 2014. On Thursday, yesterday, President Muhammadu Buhari met with about 300 parents and sympathizers of the girls, promising he will launch a new inquiry into the kidnapping of the girls. Yesufu says the parents left the meeting feeling less optimistic that the government would do what it takes to liberate the girls.
Basically, what the president said was to reiterate what he had said earlier, that he had no credible intelligence on the whereabouts of the Chibok girls, and that we're still waiting for the credible leadership of the Boko Haram group to come meet him, and he will have negotiation with them. Also, there were so many things that he did mention, the fact that the fight against terrorism that he has embarked on should be appreciated, and also that the Chibok girls were not abducted during his regime. It was abducted during the previous regime. For us, that's a bit I don't know what word to use now. First of all, because there's no vacuum in governance, irrespective of during whose administration the girls were abducted. It is the duty of the Nigerian government to ensure that the Chibok girls are rescued. And whoever is head of the Nigerian government is responsible for the rescue of the Chibok girls.
So the president, he made a comment to the parents and to your group that the girls were not abducted during his administration?
Yeah, he did reiterate that. And that also he has been fighting the war on corruption. A lot of money that was supposed to be used to arm the military went into the hands of individuals. And that's what is being recovered.
Aisha, did your group come from that meeting kind of thinking that the Nigerian government is committed to finding these girls?
We came out of this meeting not feeling a sense of connect. First of all, the president failed to even make any connection with the parents of the girls who today is 21 months that their children have been abducted. There was no personal connect, because when the president finished his microphone and walked out, that was an opportunity for us as a nation to connect with the parents and actually apologize to them for what has happened and make them feel that they are not alone in this whole tragedy that had befallen them, and that as a nation, we're together with them. And it was our president, as the father of the nation, that ought to have done that. But unfortunately, that didn't come out.
So, Aisha, just listening to you, it seems to me that President Buhari does not consider the freedom of these girls as a national emergency.
Well, it doesn't look as if it's the national emergency that it's supposed to be. But again, the president did make the mention of the fact that he thinks about them and he wakes up thinking about the girls. And so, I don't know, personally, I don't think more could have been done, especially the president connected to the parents in such a way they feel that their loss is the loss of the nation.
Aisha Yesufu is the spokeswoman for the Bring Back Our Girls movement of Nigeria. She was speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, January 15th, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. A Zimbabwean government spokesman says President Robert Mugabe is in good health, dismissing an online report that the president suffered a heart attack. Presidential spokesman Josh Charamba told reporters on Thursday that a report by the website ZimEye was false. He said there is a financial incentive to what he called the grim lie. Rumors about Mugabe's health are common. He turns 92 next month and takes a long vacation abroad each January. This is the first time this year that the government has chosen to respond to the rumors. Political analyst Shadrack Gutu of the University of South Africa says it is not surprising that Zimbabweans are talking about the president's health.
It is because President Robert Mugabe is of very advanced age. And from that point of view, naturally, he starts really suffering from ill health. So that is not disputed. The question of why he always goes to Asia for holiday, not just the media cooking up things, but the question is, what is the explanation why he always goes to Asia and doesn't go in Africa? Secondly, is he of good health? So those are two questions which are very important for not just Zimbabweans, but for Africa and the world.
When you talk about his health, you know, there's been this rumor that has been dismissed by government that the president had some complications in terms of his health. But when you read some of the messages that are being posted by people on social media, some of them are very unpleasant. You know, they are actually wishing the president to be dead or something like that. Do you think this is African?
However you don't like them, you hate them and so on, it is dangerous and I think an African to wish somebody to die. But the question is Mugabe nearing natural death? That is true, he is. And that is basically on the fact that we are all going to die one day or another. We don't live forever. And he's reached a stage where, you know, very few people pass that age and continue to live. But not only continue to live, because you can live in a vegetative manner. Do you live there with really a mind to lead a nation? And that is the issue that faces Zimbabweans and the world.
That was political analyst Shadrack Gutu of the University of South Africa speaking from Johannesburg with Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service. Liberia was first declared Ebola-free last May, only to see cases flare up two more times. But now, it's been at least 42 days since there was a case in Liberia, and even longer for Guinea and Sierra Leone. The World Health Organization yesterday finally declared an end to the Ebola epidemic, alongside warnings that more cases could flare up. Viewers Carol Pearson reports on what's being learned about this devastating disease.
Liberians greeted the news with a mixture of relief and sadness. Naomi Tegbe survived Ebola. She said thinking about the epidemic still brings tears to her eyes.
Because we saw Liberians dying every day. From a house, you could pick 3-4 bodies in the day. And you see people sick. And often when I talk about it, I think I still shed tears. Because this was a horrible experience.
While Ebola has not gone away, experts don't expect to see another pandemic like the one that just ended. Dr. Anthony Fauci at the U.S. National Institutes of Health says key lessons have been learned from the epidemic.
It's very important now for the world to fully realize that outbreaks like Ebola in West Africa have occurred with the degree of ferocity that it occurred because of the lack of a good healthcare infrastructure in those West African countries.
At the start of the outbreak, some hospitals in the region lacked running water and electricity. There were not enough laboratories to test for Ebola. Guinea, Sierra Leone, and Liberia are now better prepared. Plus, there's now an effective vaccine against the Zaire strain of Ebola that coursed its way through these countries. Fauci cites another lesson, that even without drugs to treat Ebola or a vaccine, giving patients fluids and treating their symptoms saves lives.
The mortality of the disease when you provide that care is remarkably less than it was historically felt to be. In the beginning, we heard that it was 90% fatal to have Ebola, and we found out that when you provide the appropriate care, you can bring that down to 20-30% sometimes.
The National Institutes of Health will soon wrap up a randomized trial for ZMAP and experimental Ebola treatment. Fauci said even during a deadly outbreak, it's important for clinical trials to be conducted with sound scientific methods.
Finally, we've learned that when you have an outbreak, even though you need to deliver care in the best possible way, that when you do research, you've got to do it in a scientifically sound, transparent way, so that when you get an answer, it's a durable answer.
No one knows what the next deadly outbreak will be or where it will start, but being able to find a disease when it first emerges, stop it rapidly, and keep it from spreading will save lives and prevent pandemics. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
The United Nations mission in Liberia says all is set to hand over security responsibilities to the Liberian government by June 30th this year. But as viewers Prince Collins reports from Monrovia, many challenges remain.
For the first time since Liberia's civil war ended in 2003, the country will be entirely in charge of its own security. The UN peacekeeping mission, known as UNMIL, says it is confident the Liberian government will be up to the task after the pullout. But some key issues need to be addressed within the next 5 months. UNMIL Chief of Public Information, Russell Geeky, says in order for the transition plan to succeed, the government must prioritize the security sector, and he adds several rule of law reforms before the handover deadline.
I'm thinking of the Firearms and Ammunition Act, thinking of the Bureau of Immigration and Naturalization Act. These are bills now, I should say. And of course, the Police Act. There's other acts, Domestic Violence Act. I mean, this is a critical part of security, you know, that we would like to see. And we hope that we do see progress on that very soon. Again, security is the holistic approach. We're thinking of decentralization. We're thinking of more progress on reconciliation.
The Liberian National Police say they plan to train an additional 5,000 officers. But beyond these measures by the government and police, community support is vital to the transition plan. Many Liberians say they have no confidence in the police, and relations between security forces and civilians remain strained. One local businesswoman who requested not to be identified told VOA.
Where are we going to be tomorrow? When something happens, you get to a police station. When you are right and you don't have money, police people will free the people that is wronging you. The people going, we are in worry. But police people, they are not going to guard us.
Police spokesman Sam Collins says police during past regimes have been labeled unfriendly, but the force is doing its best to improve.
I want you to have confidence in the Liberian National Police. Do we have bad police officers? Yes, we do have bad police officers, but we are weeding them out of the police on a daily basis. We have suspended people. We have sacked people. We have sent officers for prosecution. Some of them are in jail for 10 and 15 years for getting involved in acts on becoming a police officer. So all of these things we are doing is to redeem the image of the police.
Collins said there is an anonymous hotline number that Liberians can call or text to report any wrongdoing or corruption by the police. Prince Collins for VOA News, Monrovia.
A consortium of South Sudanese women groups is urging the parties to the peace agreement to appoint a female speaker of the National Legislative Assembly and to appoint women to other high-ranking positions to help balance the power in a society they say is dominated by men. They sent a petition to President Salva Kiir and copied to opposition groups detailing their request. Philipton Alil reports for VOA from Juba.
Raita Nopidia, director of AIF Organization for Women Development, praised both parties for distributing the portfolios of ministers earlier this week. Now, she says, it is time to address which women will be appointed to top government positions during the 30 months of transitional government of national unity.
We have seen the executive and all the positions are filled by men. We have seen the president and the vice president and the first vice president are all men. So we are strongly calling that the position of the speaker should be filled by a woman.
Lopidia says South Sudan's transitional constitution of 2011 and the August peace agreement requires that 25% of all government positions be occupied by women, a point that should not be up for discussion.
But this time we are saying women are also tired of all the time calling for this 25% women representation. This is constitutional and there is no need for women to beg or ask for the appointment of women in these positions.
Lopidia says a woman speaker of parliament will ensure that legislation is passed to protect the rights of girls to remain in schools and to mount abuses against women in their home. Women rights activist Angelina Daniels-Seka says besides demanding positions of power in the transitional government, women are also demanding protection from the government.
And while we are talking now, many of our sisters
Maybe among that, they are the leader also can be in this ministerial. They are at the IDP seeking protection. We want the government must take its lead to protect the civilian and especially the vulnerable people that are children and women in South Sudan. We need to get back to our normal life that I can get £1 SSP can get something for me from the market.
Seka says prices of basic commodities have increased so much that today one South Sudanese pound cannot even buy a sweet or a small piece of candy for a child in Juba. She says if the peace agreement is fully implemented, the value of the South Sudanese pound may stabilize, leading to a lower cost of living. Seka says in all previous wars in South Sudan, the warring parties agreed to power-sharing governments, but none of the suspected perpetrators of human rights abuses were ever brought to justice. She says the transitional government of national unity should hold accountable all those who committed atrocities during the conflict. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleu in Juba.
Time now for Daybreak Africa's post. Here is Mark Owome in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa sports news, we begin with football. Hosts Rwanda play Ivory Coast in the opening match at the African Nations Championships in Kigali tomorrow, Saturday. Then Gabon engage Morocco in the other Group A tie. On Sunday, attention shifts to Group B in Butare, some 140 kilometers south of the capital, Kigali, where the Democratic Republic of Congo play Ethiopia before Angola encounter Cameroon. Staying in Kigali, the Confederation of African Football, CAF, and the Asia Football Confederation are set to strengthen cooperation to develop football on the African and Asian continents, CAF disclosed on Thursday. CAF revealed that the areas of cooperation and exchange will include coaching, refereeing, youth football, and women's football. Other areas where they will work for improvements are administration, marketing, integrity, media, and innovative technologies. To formalize this process, CAF and the Asia Football Confederation signed a memorandum of understanding in Kigali today, Friday. In women's football, hosts Ethiopia play Cameroon in Addis Ababa in the return leg of the Africa qualifier for the FIFA Women's Under-17 World Cup tomorrow, Saturday. Elsewhere, Djibouti challenge Egypt as Namibia hosts Nigeria. Meanwhile, Cameroon's former Africa Footballer of the Year, Patrick Mboma, is the chief guest at Kenya's 2015 Sports Personality of the Year award ceremony in the capital, Nairobi, today, Friday. World Athletics champion in javelin, Julius Yego, and world cross-country champion, Agnes Tirop, are some of the main contenders for the men's and women's Sports Personality of the Year awards, respectively. Finally, judoka Kautha Ualal was voted Algeria's 2015 Sports Personality of the Year, the Algiers media disclosed. She earned the accolade from the Algerian media for winning gold medals in the women's 78-kilogram category at the Africa Judo Championships in Libreville, Gabon, and the All-Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa, wishing you all a sporty weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning. And that is it for this Friday, January 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, I'm James Butte saying have a lovely weekend, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, peace talks between the Burundian government and the opposition groups have been postponed with no word on when they may resume. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC when host Shaka Sali and his guests discuss the crisis in Burundi. That's next time on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk. School life. How did it shape your life and affect your personality? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing school life. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.